right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testor, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast.
Snack Time.
And articles at Gathering Magic. With me, as always, interrupting me, as always, the super flavorful master of weens, the one and only Mr. Mike Linneman.
It rhymes with cinnamon. I'm all about the flavor. It's established. Today, we got Conspiracy coming around the corner. Conspiracy Dose, Sean Main Happy Action Fun Time Set. Good cripes. And, you know, what we're thinking about this time, we've done a bunch of episodes, and we need something new to throw into the mix. So we figured, okay, we talked to artists. We've talked to designers. We've talked to cosplayers. We talked to all the flavorful aspects of Vorthos. But I already talk to Ant all the time. What about another person that works with flavor text? So on today, we have James. James, introduce yourself to the crowd for people who don't know who you are.
Hello, thank you. James Pianca. I'm on the Magic Gathering creative text team and also a narrative designer, sort of on a remote basis for the industry at large. I do VO writing for Undead Labs for State of Decay 2, which just got announced. I've been full-time at a place in Santa Monica called Firefly Games, working on a 10-plus IP mobile tie-in for a major Hollywood film studio. It's a bunch of films we all know, and I can't talk about yet, and I would love to, but it's a mobile game, so doing stuff there. I have a board game out called Roots, a Game of Inventing Words, where you combine prefixes and suffixes to make new words, and you match them to a subject card, and then argue about whose word is best.
Which is super cool, so James is an actual writer. It's not some random dude we called up and we had like three beers with at a GP. Like, he's an actual flavorful writer, similar to Ant, but less of an accent.
Even more appropriate.
Word.
James and I both wrote for Conspiracy Take the Crown.
We did indeed.
So it totally makes sense that we would have James on for this episode, and you could totally tell that we planned it.
It makes even more sense when I betray you on the air.
Oh,
that's going to be excellent. Seize your place besides Mike.
Just a terrible Twitter like feud happening at the same time. But let's get right into it. I mean, people don't care about us. They want to hear about the flavor gems. It's all about that taste. It's all about that flavor.
So to do something different this time around, right? Normally, Mike and I rip through our flavor gems. We each have, you know, our five to fit the five faces of Vorthos. But what we wanted to try to do is shake things up a little bit is we brought James on. So now we're going to get 3 points of view on our flavor gems. We're still going to go through the same five categories, but this time around, we're going to have three in each section.
Okay, so first one we're going to start off right away. My favorite, because it's my jam. We're starting with the artist. While Vorthos is defined by our boy, Mark Rosewater, as the people that are interested in the beauty of the game, Ant wrote the comical article, Vorthos 2015, which should have been called The Five Faces of Vorthos, where Ant describes...
It's just like never end.
It's never gonna end until you rewrite
it. I just need
it.
To rewrite the article so you stop giving me a hard time.
You say that every single time. And Ant outlined five different aspects that are Vorthos creations. We're going to go through each one of them, looking into the set, because it kind of breaks you down into different things. I'm an art guy, former art director. I studied art. It's my jam. I don't really do cosplay, but that's still part of Vorthos. So we're going to get into that. So the first flavor gem for the artists of the squad that are in Conspiracy, Take the Crown Conspiracy, the dose. I'll start out. I chose Borderland Explorer. Borderland Explorer, it's a simple two drop, 3/1, comes into play, neat, discard a card, get some lands. By Lucas Graciano, amazing dude that makes dragons that are sell in literally an hour whenever he puts them up. This piece, this original artwork, sold in less than 2 hours on the MTG Art Exchange Facebook group. This painting for $2,500, which is criminally underpriced. Mm-hmm. Two big things about this piece that are so good. One, it's a black elf. It's the first time we've ever seen this. You could argue to say, well, this one was a dark elf. No, it's the black characteristics. It's always the nose. You got to have the nose right, and you cannot wing that. You can't be Warhammer or other things. It's like, well, I have black skin. No, it has to be the features.
this set First at large has this set at large has a lot of awesome representation steps being taken. So I think like you see faces of color in Conspiracy 2 across the board in super interesting ways.
And it's simplistic. I mean, it's not like you need to have like, well, it needs to be a black human and people won't get it. It's like, well, black elves don't just have to be dark elves. You can just make them right. black. This is fantasy. You realize this isn't real. So
yeah, it's always one of those things where, you know, some people they'll think like, oh, this is so different and whatever. But it's like, you know, why when you give a human pointy ears, do they automatically have to be white? Like that never made any sense.
Like, oh, all our fantasy has to have misogyny because it defines the society of that we're referencing. It's like, dude, this story has dragons in it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
none of that shit matters. Excuse me. None
society
of that
went out the window 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. Nothing. You know? We're telling whatever exactly the stories we want to tell at every step. We're doing whatever we want all the time. And it's just, we make excuses for why, you know, why something that we want might not align with somebody else's, but fact of the matter is, people want white faces because it comforts them. They are white. They're used to seeing white faces, and it doesn't challenge them, doesn't push them. But it excludes huge portions of the population who are not white and are consuming the same media and would love to see themselves.
Right. So I went into my local game shop and asked one of the guys working there. He's a friend of mine. We play draft at my house. And I said, have you noticed the black elves? And he's like, are you kidding me? I've been losing my mind with the two or three friends of mine to be like, do we need this in foil and we need it hot for Commander decks, which is cool and great. Representation, huge deal, got to be done. Do it like here, no announcement, just Sean Main, hey, art director Cynthia, can you just make that happen? Like, okay, I got you, fam, done. That's not why I like this piece even. I like this piece for that, that's great. But I love this piece because it references Wanderlust. It references an alpha art card, which you never see. If you go to the original Wanderlust, the OG, or Cornelius, our boy, the exact sort of frame, looking right, with the stick, shows a white guy that straight up looks like out of 1984, some sort of novel cover. And instead, they're like, hey, make that, except it's 2016. And Lucas is like, okay, I got that. How about I make it a black elf? Like, okay, we're doing it. And that's amazing. That sort of nod to the enfranchised player is subtle in Conspiracy, whereas in Time Spiral, it hit you over the head and it was too much. So I really, really appreciate any sort of nods of that. I think top to bottom, this is utterly incredible. And I think it's a new normal for what we should expect for the level of the art game.
I also like that landscape in the background. It's a Western reference. It looks like the American West, especially with that predator bird in the air, those pine and the rock formations. We don't see fantasy like that. It's typically more Euro-based than its geology, and I like the complication.
We see it with Adam Paquette sometimes, but that's only on certain lands he gets to do. Sometimes he goes full Hudson Valley, but otherwise not. But enough on this piece. James, you're up. You got to give us some heat. What do you got?
A word. Protector of the Crown is all about the perspective in this composition. The whole point of it, so all damage dealt to you, it would be dealt to you as Delta Protector of the Crown instead. Which is actually interesting. It doesn't turn that effect off if you lose the Monarch effect. But regardless, the whole point is that this is a figure of safety. This is someone who's here to care for us. And so we are down on the ground in a childlike position, looking up at this, you know, this figure of great stature. I'm reminded of the mountain in Game of Thrones. And if you actually look in the bottom left corner, you see the silhouette of a figure, of a mounted figure under that arc. It's actually Marchesa. It's not as clear here as it was in previous proofs that Ant and I saw in the interface for submitting for the writing submissions. It was much clearer, and it was certainly in the direction that it was, that it is actually Marchesa there. And so I feel very safe in the presence of this big golden man. It's great.
I love the what I really like about this card is, so like the flavor text says, I'd gladly offer my weapon and my life to the glory of my sovereign, right? And it creates this air of protection, and you have these, like, you know, like you said, these kids that are kind of looking up in awe. But at the same time, it has this kind of dark overtone where that figure in the background in the shadows could very well also be saying, hey, in order to protect me and to protect our crown, you need to do away with these little kids.
Yeah, it's totally fascist. You're
like, you're there's definitely a layer there where it's like, I'm not really sure. Like, is he going to stab that kid in the head, or is he going to protect that kid from getting stabbed in the head? I really don't know.
Kind of looks like he's confining them as if they would be a political problem for her at some event happening elsewhere in the palace grounds. And so he's like, she's like, make sure these kids don't show up and instigate some consequence for me. Like,
keep them safe. Keep them safe, but keep them contained.
Right. Keep me safe by keeping them safe.
Yeah. Right.
Did you guys notice the background architecture in this piece?
Kind of looks like Ravnica. It's high.
It does look like Ravnica. Also, the semicircle with the different separations. That's straight up Babylon Ishtar Gate. If you've ever been to Berlin, they straight up acquired the Ishtar Gate with lapis, and they rebuilt it in Berlin. So there is a reference to this, like, ancient history of this place. It's not like this is a new city. It's super old. They've been squabbling over this forever. And obviously the blue references in there, like, I caught what they did there with the hanging gardens, the plants on top. Yeah, I know what they're doing there.
It aligns with Marchesa's narrative too, in that it's like, you know, a sort of imperial appropriation. Which I will take this crown.
100%. I think it's a stellar piece. And Johannes Voss, super cool dude. His Kiz token Kickstarter, or now it's just a Patreon, is actually pretty neat too. Good choice, James. Anthony Jerome Tessitore, what do you got for us?
All right, so I have Throne Warden, and I picked this for one reason and one reason only: the shield. So something that's super important when you're looking through conspiracy from an art perspective is symbols.
Right.
So a lot of times you'll see the symbol that represents Brago's former position and the custody, and it's this kind of circle with spikes on the end symbol, right? You can see it as it's made into the shield itself. It's an indentation in the shield, right? Marchesa's faction displays this black rose symbol. And on the shield here, you can clearly see the black rose has been painted over top of the original Paliano symbol, and it's dripping paint to just signify, hey, this is so new, so fresh in the minds of everyone, this Marchesa takeover, that this soldier like didn't even have time to get a new shield made. He just took the one he had, spray painted a new logo on the front, and, you know, kept up the fight. So I really like the visual narrative behind this, where it's just, it's really hitting you over the head, the fact that this takeover happened really quickly. Not a lot of people were expecting it. Not a lot of people were ready for it. And that's kind of why the chaos is happening and why this battle for the throne is taking place.
All right. I dig that. I can't get by the foreshortening. having worked as an art director, asking for anything foreshortened, artists, you know, will say, are you sure we need that? Is there any other way to do it? Because once you see it, you can't unsee it, especially often foreshortened forms, whether it's an arm or a sword, or usually it's some sort of like pole axe or something. It's always in the middle of the frame. And at card size, it is the central focus often of the piece, because it's always shining or glistening or something. So hats off to Chris for getting it done. That is actually correct in the lighting, because I know that is not easy, because you can't do reference for this. I mean, you need like a fisheye lens on your like camera phone. Like, what? Come on. So super cool for to see that. Next up for both of you, which I shouldn't put this second, it really should be the last group, Christ, is the writing aspect of Vorthos in it. And that's the person who cares about the written aspects of it. So names, flavor text, and how that interacts with each other on the card. I'm going to go last on this.
Go first.
Yeah, knock it out.
I'm going to go first.
Do it. Go first. Right.
So my card is Recruiter of the Guard. I picked this card because I wrote the name and the flavor text
for
this card. And I have a little story that I just wanted to share about this card, because I feel like it's... So the writer as an aspect, right, of Vorthos, a lot of times they get confused with, you know, writing of the narrative, writing of the story, but that's not always the case. It's more just somebody who's really interested in writing in general and the kind of like the behind the scenes that goes into a lot of the writing that happens, particularly for Magic. When I was working on this set, it was, you know, this was a little while ago, but the Black Lives Matter movement was really being covered a lot on CNN. And they had someone who was being interviewed, and they were talking about the movement, and what she said in the interview was that it's really tough for their cause to get supported because it doesn't have a coherent voice. And I thought that that was really interesting and really kind of like moving, and that's what inspired me to write that line of flavor text.
Very nice.
So that's, you know, something that has absolutely nothing to do with magic whatsoever, but somehow found its way into the game through writing.
Right. For the record, as an aside, as a political aside, that movement has many voices, and the central narrative is not complicated. Stop killing us.
Right. I mean, this was a year ago when we were working on this set. So at the time, it was more when it was just starting to get a lot of video coverage on like CNN, stuff like that.
Definitely. No, it's I thought this whole set was a very politically charged.
What card did you pick?
Are you talking to me now? Is it my turn? So I likewise wrote the name and the flavor text on this card. I think it's probably the standout card of the set for me. And I think that when you are afforded that rare moment to do both, to have the name on the card and the quote, it allows you to tell such a unified story. Like it really lets you hammer hit two different notes in a way that complicates and sort of enriches the story you're trying to tell. And so this card just has such strong design.
What's the card?
Excuse me, Subterranean Tremors. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, so Subterranean Tremors, you know, it's a red sorcery for X and a red, and it says Subterranean Tremors deals X damage to each creature without flying. If X is 4 or more, destroy all artifacts. If X is 8 or more, a giant lizard token bursts through the ground and is now on the battlefield. And so I loved naming this card because I could not focus on any one of those three modes. You know, it wasn't about, you know, breaking everybody's knees on the ground. It wasn't just about breaking all the machines on the ground, and it certainly wasn't about the addition of a token. It had to have a name that referenced or was sensible in all three of those modes. And so I liked the tremors as a way that sort of scaled in intensity as a god. Like, you could have little tremors and maybe, like, you know, maybe kill some people, or then it, like, starts destroying infrastructure and architecture, and then finally you get the source of it. You get the final source, the originator of these tremors. And as far as flavor text goes, this was a weird one because I was just feeling glib. You know, I think I banged that one out pretty quickly at the end of a session, maybe. I was like kind of tired.
Yeah. Those are always the best ones. Yeah, I feel like.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of my good quippy one-liners come when I'm really tired and I'm just like starting to get snarky, you know? Like,
yeah, just like a little bit of sneer in the voice.
Yeah.
And so I thought that wrapped up the card nicely, and props to whomever at Wizards selected that thing. I appreciate and I'm honored by the choice.
It's really interesting to me that Paliano, right, is a city all about politics, and it's all about, you know, like subtlety and playing the long con, right? And it's just fascinating to me that on this plane where that is happening, there is this looming disaster that can totally just totally destroy everything. Marchesa has probably been planning her climb to the throne for years. And this was like 100 feet shy of just like tipping the whole city over.
Because it's only an 8/8, I imagine it's like still a surmountable threat. It's also so it's also worth noting it's the high city is protected from this. This is a danger. This is a hazard exclusively for the poor.
Yeah, right. For the low folk, they're the ones who have to worry about it.
Absolutely. So just a little bit of destructive fantasy classism. Hooray!
Yeah.
I mean,
all right, what do you got, Mike?
I chose the easiest choice here because I knew both of you would, you know, swing for fences on things you did. I like to always find things, you know, card names that don't exist yet but should. You know, the simple ones, the zap, the snap, anything very, very quickly done. And in referencing anything in D&D, you always have, you know, the dungeon master, you have the person in town, the shopkeep, you have a pawn shop, which they mentioned Mercadian Masks, which is always comical to see with Paliano. But one of the cards that I noticed right away was Keeper of Keys. That's it. Straight up, dude who holds keys. That's the name of the card. Like, I was like, oh, I guess that makes sense. How have we not used that yet? Or any sort of like, you know.
It's sexy because of that alliteration.
It is. I mean, the alliteration
is very sexy.
It's fantastic. But the concept is that, you know, some art description person, because that's obviously where the name came from, duh, because he's holding keys. But, you know, they went in there and be like, what about a dude just holding keys? How's that sound?
Yeah, you know? Right?
Like they have...
I always love like when I'm working on a set, when I come up with a name like that, and I think like there is no way that this hasn't been used. and you go on to Gather, you type it in, and you're like, oh, like holy, it hasn't been used. Like it's such a crazy perfect moment here. Yeah,
it's getting used right now.
Yeah, like for example, Banish.
Yeah.
That has not been used yet for a card.
That requires an extremely iconic piece of removal.
Yeah. Like something white like, removal.
Yeah, white or even blue maybe. Like doesn't I feel like Venser is in the business of banishing. So I imagine that
it just amazes me that, you know, 15,000 cards later, Banish somehow made it through. How is that possible?
I don't know. I actually learned the word banish as a child from Magic the Gathering. I remember there are these excellent Ice Age comics. I bought one at a gas station in South Carolina. And I remember there was this – it's like some character gets banished, which means, you know, he just like gets portaled out of that realm and into a different one. And they cut to this panel of the dude just like sort of smote against the side of an abyss. And I like that's where you go when you get banished. And so that was like my introduction to the verb. it was wonderful.
And those comics really are so bad they're good. I love them. Mm-hmm. I have a stack of them. Whenever I go to a comic shop, I always go through the M's to see if they got any of the old school ones. And they're like $2. Like the old school, like Shadow Mage, the Ice Age ones. I found one for like $1 when I was visiting Portland. But yeah, we'll get to those. Moving on. Next up, we have the Oracle, which at first glance, Ant makes no sense. Nobody knows what that means.
Yeah. But so just to be clear, real quick, right? The Oracle is anybody who wants to bridge the gap between the fantasy world, a la Magic, and the real world. The reason I chose Oracle is because in ancient times, an Oracle served as the bridge between the humans and the gods. It was their way of interacting between two different mediums, right? So that's what I am a cosplayer. I am serving as an oracle for everyone who gets to experience magic through me in the real world, as opposed to in the fantasy.
Oh, right. And it's more than just cosplay. The easy answer
but that's
is...
the easy example.
The easy example is cosplay. Other things you could think of would be like, a stuffed animal of Stocking Tiger. If you made one,
right,
it's bridging that gap.
Right. Or those the Ratchet Bomb deck cases that were being made.
100%.
Right. That's another example where you are physically holding a Ratchet Bomb.
Right.
You're bridging that gap. You're blurring the lines between what's fantastical and what's real.
Or even the Hell Vault or the Hedrons at pre-release events.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So I'll start this out right real quick. Mine will be simple. I'm choosing Tyler Jacobson's artwork of Selvala, Heart of the Wilds, mainly because you can see this as a reference image. Like, if you got yourself a big old doggo, put someone dressed up, you could literally see, oh, this could be real. And that begs the question of how much realism do you want in your fantasy? And this looks like, oh, this could be a person. I don't know what culture this would be. This could be maybe Nepalese or something, but I could see this being plausible. And why I chose this depiction of Selvala amongst her other ones is you get to see how her hat looks from the side, which unless you get a style guide, you don't get to see turnarounds of major characters. So you don't know always as a cosplayer what these people look like from different angles. So I just love seeing that. And it's a great looking pupper. I mean, it really is. It's really well done by Tyler. He's been leveling up every 6 weeks, I swear. He's getting more and more art awards constantly. And this hat, I can't wait for someone to make it. I think it's going to be super cool to see.
People are definitely going to make that hat.
Well, they're going to make that hat. Like, they're going to make that hat for their dog. Like, it's going to happen.
Hey, check out the sleeves. It's sort of, I mean, we're going to get to Marchesa. She's got even more pronounced sleeves. But Poliana's got great sleeve trends going on.
Yeah, it's very, like, Renaissance Italy almost.
Oh, yeah, explicitly. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I love it.
All right, so James, what do you got for us?
Well, I wanted to go with Kaya, Ghost Assassin. We touched on this theme a little bit before, but Poliana is a plane full of faces of color. It's fantastic. And they were just like, you know, in a world building perspective, they're like, okay, we got, you know, we have this Italian Renaissance city, which is one of the whiter choices you can make. And they're like, you know what, let's just scramble all the ethnicities. Let's invert that. Let's have tons of faces of color, all these, like, just spread it across all of the fictional races, blurred into elves, into humans, whatever. And then most importantly, let's introduce our first black woman planeswalker. So we don't know anything about her publicly that we can talk about. A lot of the story is still under wraps, but this is a demographic that Magic has had never before put on such a prominent, you know, like, sort of brand representation, and it's fantastic.
I just like that her hair is right. Like, her hair just looks right. It's not forced. It's just correct.
Yeah.
Like, I don't notice it. That's great.
My favorite part of this whole artwork is her stance. So she's standing, like, leaning up against the wall, very casual, as if you know, like, nothing to see here, it's totally fine, but she's holding the one dagger,
mm-hmm.
totally in line with her forearm. So at first glance, it looks like she's just, you know, casually resting on her arm, resting up against the wall, but really she's holding a dagger, mm-hmm. like, ready to stab you in the neck, you know. And it's almost creating this Han Solo vibe where he's reclining, you know, not really paying attention, and then shooting first and up, sorry, you're dead. You know, like, it has that same kind of just roguish charm that I really like.
Right. Absolutely. How does that differ for you on her alternate art foil?
I have not seen it yet.
Have you not seen that? Yeah. Google that right now. Her foil version is a different piece of art. There is.
I need to look this up.
There is no foil version of this.
Ant is legitimately the worst right now.
I am the worst right now. I'm shocked.
I think it was like yesterday or today on Reddit. So you're not that far behind.
No, it's the same thing that they did back in the day with Irritai the Corrupted. Same sort of situation, that there was an alternate art with foil for Plane Shift, which is pretty cool to see that.
Interesting.
And that's
So this one is showcasing her ghost walk ability.
Right. I don't think it's as good a piece of art, to be honest, but it's got a new color that this one doesn't, which is, you know, swag.
But if you're gonna have foil, she gotta be all ghosty foil. I mean, otherwise, what are you doing?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's interesting though that, like, you know, I mean, both of these artworks really give us, like, a great window into her personality and into her character, because, you know, like I was saying before, the first one shows her, like, almost purposefully being relaxed and trying to draw you off guard, whereas in this other one, it's just straight up confidence. Like, she knows for a fact, there's no way you're going to stop me because I literally walk through walls.
Yeah.
Like, how do you stop an assassin who just walks through everything? Like, what do? You know, like, oh, I'm going to build a wall and protect myself. Like, no,
well,
you're not.
I mean,
I'm going to put armor on. Like, no, you're not.
I think
you
just die.
Like, what are you going to do? You're dead.
Even if you're already dead, I think you just die.
Even if you're already dead, yeah. That which is dead will die again.
Yeah.
She'll just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But, wow, that's interesting. And it's the same artist, too.
Yeah. Okay. On the complete inversion of that, Marchesa sitting so proudly in that chair.
Yeah, that's my pick for this one is Queen Marchesa. I just so badly want to see somebody recreate this entire piece of art. Like,
With the chair?
I want to see, like, Sprankle do it up sit at a GP and just preside over everyone in character the entire day. Just like little, like we're little plebs running around playing our little card game, and she's just sitting there judging us the entire time. Like, I cannot say enough good things about this piece. The second I saw that piece of artwork in the set, I was like in love. And then I looked at the type line and it said assassin and legendary. And then I was, I mean, right. She will be my commander for, right. For the rest of my life.
Right.
Forever.
Right.
Just forever.
I'm hoping that people do some creative, interesting things with her in commander.
I've been brewing all week.
Excellent.
Like, I'm just thinking of different stuff that I got to do.
Excellent. I mean, what's your approach here? Because her design is so open. It's not like...
I don't know. I'm torn between using the new cards to pass Monarch around and just ignoring that completely.
I don't think enough of them are
just
competitive.
I'm thinking about going straight, like, politics, using all of the different black-white taxation cards and red cards that totally screw with what you thought your plan was going to be.
Right.
To just be an absolute disruptive
powerhouse. How do you not add first strike to everything? You have two death touchers with haste. You got to add somehow, find some equipment, add first strike to it, and you're just going to kill everything. And that's comical. One black assassin.
It's commander, though. It's commander, so you're not really trying to win by combat damage. You can, well, but...
Yeah, but this is... James, this is the same guy whose favorite commander deck kills all infinite amount of lands.
Also true.
He's a total 100% doesn't understand the spirit of commander Spike.
Oh, well, dude, I gotta side with Mike here, dude. There's no such thing as the spirit of commander.
No, it's a BS term. When I ask, okay, how competitive are your decks? And people would be like, I don't know, average. And I'm like, okay, you've never played commander before. Either you're playing pre-con, you're playing like French rules, or somewhere in between the middle. And I'm sorry if my win con is to kill everyone with Hurricane and the rest of you are dirtling with 2/4 dudes that do nothing.
Your win con is Hurricane?
Yeah, oh yeah.
All right.
There's a couple win cons, but one of them happens to be Hurricane and you kill everyone. It's great. But like Marchesa, if you could do a first strike, can you imagine having any sort of giant demon, dragon, whatever, and you're terrified of a 1/1 assassin death touch first strike? Like, that's comical. Like, one damage doesn't matter, but you don't want to block because it dies. Like, that's funny. That's political trickery at its best. That's Cersei Lannister.
I would want to see Vraska at the same table so her assassins could these little assassins up. Oh no, I swore. That whole line has to go. Bummer.
That's all right. I'll just put a dog barking.
We can add milk in.
Yeah, because these assassins may have death touch and haste, but they don't cause you to lose the game when they hit you.
Correct.
So I'm sorry. My 1/1 assassin creature token standards are kind of spoiled.
Well, I mean, we had one planeswalker that kind of ruined it, and I want to hear more from Vraska, because the idea of Gorgons always being evil, I've never really been okay with. Because it doesn't make sense, frankly.
She's a victim in the myth, in the Greek myth.
100%. 100% she is. And the other, you know, Medusas that do exist. We're moving on. We got a 30-minute episode per always. Next up we got is the Dreamer. And the Dreamer is the person of the Vorthos lore that really wants to see the storyline. It's the lore. And lore means story. It doesn't mean all things Vorthos, even despite what YouTube videos tell you. It really ties with the backstory going on that you can see in cards, but that isn't always the full timeline of what's going on. We have three really, really good options here. Ant, you're going last, of course. James, you're gonna be in the middle of the bookend here. I'm starting out this. I chose Inquisition of Kozilek. The new art, Headbutt Kozilek. Simply because it gives us a glimpse. And to the people that really are against having conspiracy or any of these pseudo sets that are not storyline driven, it gives us a glimpse. It gives us a glimpse into what's still going on a different plane. And with Kozilek, you're like, oh, there's someone there that's not Eldrazi yet. Oh, that other person that isn't Eldrazi isn't fully Eldrazified. If you will, like we're seeing on Innistrad. So the people are still fighting back. on the plane as Endicar. That's cool. So it wasn't just an annihilation and, you know, there's like 30 people left. Oh, it was, you know, the Gatewatch saved the day and there's still people there fighting, but, you know, they're still around. It's there will be rebuilding of sorts. Yeah. Also, it also shows the Kozilek plates above the head, which I think is a really cool concept, that the magic or the thing that stealing someone is still happening despite that the Titans are gone, which is super cool. Super cool to see that the Titan that dealt with Kozilek is dead and gone, but yet the things are still happening. That's cool.
I just think, to me, that the most interesting part of this whole piece is the fact that, just simply put, like, Kozilek is the breaker of realities, right? Like, he's the distorter. He approaches the battlefield in a way that you would never expect, right? So if I wanted you to discard a card...
He's the Stephen Lynch of Eldrazi.
Yes. Nine times out of ten, right, if we're doing discard, it's some kind of mind spell. It's some kind of, like, I'm showing you a terror or a nightmare or something that's affecting your mind, yeah, right? Yeah. Kozilek doesn't do it in the normal way. He just headbutts you and breaks your nose.
That's funny.
Like, but it also doesn't make sense. It doesn't jive with my normal way that I would think about discard, and that's exactly how I should feel when I look at Kozilek making me discard.
You get smoked in the face, you would discard. You ever played football?
You would. You totally would. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I love that idea, just that simple idea of, like, Kozilek literally has the ability to, like, reach into this dude's brain and scramble it from another dimension, and he instead decides, I'm just going to headbutt you in the face.
P.S. This is also an illegal football hit. It's called spearing. You gotta get your head down and off to the side, you know, otherwise you will get a concussion. So yeah. Fair enough on that point.
Mike, I do appreciate your first point of revisiting planes while we're elsewhere. And it sort of relates to that question. It's like, why do we so frequently see planeswalkers on their home plane? Like, why don't we need, like, to meet, I thought meeting Tamiyo on Innistrad was awesome. Like, right. Totally did. I was completely aware of the nature of planeswalking and just how foreign one would be on a plane, on a different plane, and just how special that ability is.
I love seeing that more often, where you see that, why is that person, we saw that in the OG5, like, why are they on Lorwyn? Well, yeah, they were supposed to be in Future Sight, whatever, whatever. But realistically, the fact that they were in Lorwyn is like, oh, that actually makes more sense than them being on Future Sight, because they're supposed to travel. That's the whole concept.
I mean, if you really look, there's... each block, there's usually one planeswalker who really sticks out like a sore thumb. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, Theros, we had Ashiok. Like, Ashiok totally did not jive with the rest of what was going on there. And it was so loud that it just hit you over the head with, this person planeswalked to get here.
Right.
When we went to Tarkir, we had Sorn, who, again, stood out like a sore thumb. You're like, how did this person get here? Oh, that's right.
Right, there's a Gothic vampire wandering around Mongolia right now. This is odd.
Like, it made no sense. So I really like when they do that, and I like that they continue to do that. Like, Tamiyo on Innistrad is a great example. You know, like, we have a Japanese moonfolk. Like, what is this? Why is she here?
Right.
You know, how is she here is the more important question, and that ultimately gets you ready for the answer of, oh, our main characters can planeswalk.
Dang, love it. James, what do you got for us? Bring some heat.
So I took one of the tag teams that Ant and I worked on together. Leovold, Emissary of Trest, or Leovold, I don't know how people are pronouncing it yet. I've actually forgotten the name, his original name, that we first met him as writers. And then, you know, once we got our acceptances, he was listed as Fabian, and he is now Leovold. So he's... Creative was undecided on this dude's name, but regardless, so I got the epithet here. So Emissary of Trust did almost zero creative lifting on that one, but I'm happy to accept the foil.
Get it there.
Ant, by contrast, actually wrote something. I'm sure we can come to an arrangement, which is
right.
First of all, I want to commend you on this, Ant. You and for those who don't know, which is literally everyone who's not on this team, is that we, or maybe not, I've said this before, so never mind. We get to visualize in, like, a sort of a real-time 3D rendering, like a mock-up of the card, our text as we're writing it. And so we can see when a line breaks and when a line, when we've added too many characters to the space allotted and it spills over into the next line. And there's an aesthetic difference between one line, one word, 10 words, you know, like, you know, if Cummings taught us anything, it's that like text is also visual. It appears on a page in a visual compositional way. And so always super value singular lines that fill up the whole space, like are exactly the length of a line. And it's a little short. It's a little short. You could have gotten like three more characters.
You could have done I am, no contractions.
Right.
But I commend.
It wouldn't have fit his character though. It wouldn't have fit his cadence.
No, it would have ruined the voicing, and I'm being completely
like suspicious. Leovold as a character totally like he has all the time in the world, but on the same token, like his time is worth every penny.
Right.
So like the second that he wasted saying I am sure, no. Yeah. He's like, I'm sure we can come to an arrangement, like get out of my next. I got stuff to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. I've got votes to fix.
Yeah, right, yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's funny. I loved the approach that this art took because it's totally from the point of view of somebody sitting in like the small chair on the other side of a desk.
Right.
Like this vibe to me felt like every time I've ever had to go into like my boss's office and sit down and have like a quarterly review or something, like I'm always on the other side of a big desk.
Yeah, there's like torches, you know, up above him scenarios, obscuring his face, and like,
yeah, it just like you could just totally tell that he is a character who's putting himself in a position of power, right? Where he's more comfortable than you are. And I just like, when I was writing for this card, I'm just sitting there trying to think, like, what is he saying right now? He's outstretching his hand. Like, he looks like he's trying to shake my hand. Like, he's got coins all over his desk. I feel like I just paid him or something. You know, like what's happening here? And that was, like, the slimiest thing that I could possibly get him to say.
Right.
In one line.
Well done. The reason I chose this for the Dreamer category is because previously, I don't believe Trest as a city had a real home in the multiverse. It was sort of non-committal before. I think when it was,
we just had the Spymaster, right?
Yeah, we just had Edric, right? So one of the things they told us in terms of narrative direction going into this set was that Trest as a city had been retconned into Fiora as a rival type city other than Pollyanno. And I loved that. I loved that resolution of that loose end, its incorporation into this new IP, and now
that's not a retcon then. That's just a loose end. Like retcon would be rewriting it. Right, they just didn't write it. They just kind of left it.
Okay, sure.
So when we first met,
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, Edric, which
okay, sure, it's not a retcon.
Is that not part of conspiracy?
But it's a retroactive.
Like, oh, there's this other place, and you're like, what's this plane chase plane?
It's a retroactive narrative adjustment. Like Trest had been deployed already, and it found its home here. And so I loved seeing that happen. I also loved the complication of it, the addition of a third color to diversify the sort of, you know, character of that place. And then in a sort of meta context, I like this design space being used for bug. A lot of bug, especially commanders, all interact with the graveyard, and so. It's been nice to watch the competitive community brew around this card right now because he offers sort of combo space that bug had previously not allowed.
Right, and as a commander, it has everything elf, all the elf colors in the colors you want. Boom, new commander.
So speaking of color, though, the most interesting thing to me about this is, you know, James, you touched on this a little bit, that, you know, Trest is kind of a rival city to Pollyanno, right? Mm-hmm. And so right now, our figurehead in this set for Trest is Leovold, who is, like you said, bug, right? Black, green, and blue. Mm-hmm. Marchesa, right, leading Pollyanno, is black, white, and red. So she's on the other side of the color wheel.
Right.
And the only color that the two of them share is the color of ambition, which is black.
How insightful.
And I think that is so fitting to, like, what conspiracy is all about, right? No. So I wonder if it was on purpose.
I'm sure it was.
Well, speaking of black, Ant, what's your pick?
Right. So I took Phyrexian Arena reprint new art. My boy, Koth lives. I love Koth. Like, I think Koth is such an interesting character, and it pains me to know that, like, he's got it in his head that he can never leave his home. Like, I totally understand. It totally fits him. It totally fits his narrative that he would want to stay and fight Phyrexia forever. You know, like, as it says on Darksteel Plate, if he can't have a victory, he's going to fight forever. That's Koth. It's him. Like, it makes total sense. But it means I don't get to see him that often, yeah, right? If we don't go to Mirrodin or we don't see a reprint like this, I'm not going to get a lot of Koth. And just having someone show me that he's still alive, he's still kicking, and he's still fighting that good fight, he's still living up to his word and fighting forever, like, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Do you find it odd that the mechanic assumes that he's somehow being harmed in an arena over and over again?
To be honest, I didn't even think about it.
Is he stuck?
I mean, to me, this felt very reminiscent of the Phyrexian arena of Apocalypse, where Urza and Gerard were forced to fight each other at the whim of Yawgmoth, and, you know, like, the Phyrexians are all looking on, watching these two friends battle it out, right? It has a very similar vibe, but, you know, it's more lonely, right? It's like one is the loneliest number. Koth is there all by himself, and he's fighting Phyrexia forever, almost to the amusement of the Praetors, right? Like, they know that he's not going to win. Honestly, Koth probably knows deep down that he's not going to win, but his pride is getting in the way, and his love for his former home is getting in the way, and he's just like, I need to keep doing this. I need to do this forever. And they're just going to keep throwing stuff at him, and it's almost like watching a train wreck. You know, like Koth isn't going to single-handedly save Mirrodin, and we know that, and he probably knows that, but it's still happening, and I still want to watch it happen.
I think James, what do you think of this? I'm curious to hear your view.
I'm with Anne 100%. I think he's got a wonderful emotional connection to this character. I think the now in arena is not being used literally here. I think this is certainly not a game. You know, and I think the arena is probably Koth's enclosure, the you know, his imprisonment there, and the unending, like, performance and exertion that's asked of him. Like, he has to, if he ever sleeps, you know, they're just going to swallow him. So he has to constantly maintain his little nest. Although they are in the Furnace Lair, I know that Urabrask is permissive. At least he tolerates their presence because he lacks Norn's, you know, sort of evangelical kind of zeal.
Right, which brought Phyrexian Red into. Oh, Red also means mercy, which was brand new at the time. I worked on the new Phyrexia set, and I remember reading that, and I'm like, this doesn't make sense at all. But when you think about that, if you're thinking black aligned things, if your actions do not affect my ambitions. Mm. I don't care. Like, you can do whatever you want.
But Red is raw emotion.
Well, sure. But I get that.
I think the real struggle, though, is that Phyrexia has this hive mind culture, and Red has a very stark freedom element to it that flies in the face of a hive mind.
Right. Sure. But the freedom part of it, it's still Phyrexia. Like, you can't remove that.
Right. It's a Phyrexian expression of that color. And I didn't mean to say that Red is emotion in a sort of broad way. It's pretty inarticulate. I mean that Red is passion. Red is the sort of unbridled, like, experience of emotion. Like, the sort of, like, being carried along its current. And it's interesting that you point out mercy being a Red concept. I think that's fascinating because it's certainly not a white concept. You know, right. You would think, 100%. It would be the angels and stuff. But, like, Magic's angels are judicious.
Yeah, they're vengeful.
Yeah, they.
Which we just found out.
They smite you big time.
And Magic's white villains are people like Elish Norn and Marchesa and stuff who are authoritarian.
Right.
And in Norn's case, dogmatic.
Right. So I love seeing that new push of the color pie, which we don't really get to see every set. Every now and then you get to see, like, oh yeah, red is fascism, remember? And people are like, what? And all of a sudden, Kamigawa, it's like, oh, yeah, the white guy's the bad guy. And you're like, what? No? And it's such a revolutionary concept. And I'd love to see that in, like, Green. Because Green is, like, big, dumb, instinctive, whatever. But we haven't seen nuance that often in it because there hasn't really been a Green protagonist that we've really, really got to get in-depth look into that needed...
We had Nyssa during the Zendikar block, but it just wasn't as successful.
Correct. And some of that could have been how she was portrayed. Some of that could have been her previous history that people could not let go of.
She got retconned, right?
Yeah, she did.
She got actually retconned.
She actually got retconned, yes. But even Garrick, we look at him and we're like, well, how is he Green? He, like, hunted things and killed other planeswalkers?
Animal beasties.
Yeah, he likes beasties. He likes
Green, like, because beasts.
He likes pets things, you know?
He's a beastie boy.
Yeah, I get that. And I'd like to see, like, how, you know, how their community is built. Or even Black. How can Black be good? How can, you know...
We had a Black protagonist in BFZ with the... What was her name? What was the vampire chick?
Draena. Draena was one.
Draena, yeah. Draena was a beautifully executed... and, like, you know, accurate use of Black in the color pie in terms of its psychological goals, but also being used as a protagonist narratively. Draena was great.
And we have it on TV right now with House of Cards. Both of the main characters are Black-aligned people, and they're married.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're certainly Black, but they're
they have other colors, but clearly they have Black aspects to them, which you're like,
their ambition is what rules their ultimate decision-making process.
Yeah. We've yapped about this a little too much. We're getting to the gamer thing. Rolling into the next one.
Good luck. The game. Half of this.
it's always how it do. The gamer is people that want flavorful output, flavorful interactions in the game as they play.
Yeah, I just call this narrative design. This is what narrative design is.
This is narrative design.
Correct. So, James, start us off. What do you got for your jam?
Great. So I got Ballot Broker. I did not name her, but I love the alliteration. I'm happy with whoever did. I got the flavor quote down here. Merchants and politicians differ only in name. It's a quote attributed to Queen Marchesa. And the card says that while voting, you may vote an additional time. So this is also, I think, meaningful creature type advisor. So this is basically a lobbyist. This is a Pollyanna lobbyist who allows you like through her presence, and you're like, I guess like the brokerage, the purchase that you've done is you've paid her mana cost. I wish there were sort of an ongoing investment required of you in order to do this. But so she's basically a lobbyist who works on your behalf. And I love that it commodifies and commercializes voting, which is already the case in our world. And nice to see reflected in a you know, sort of comparable political setting like Pollyanna.
Right, and this is a hard card to evaluate. If you get this in a draft, a 3-drop 2/3 is not good. Like, that's not great pick to take. But
it's also not terrible.
It's not terrible either. This is one of those skill testing cards. If you open this pack 1, you're going to pass it. You open this pack 2, you're like, ooh, if I get 2 or 3 of these and they're all my 3-drops, I'm going to crush in voting. I'm going to have all the lobbyists, and I'm going to straight up be Halliburton right now.
You just better have the vote cards to back it up.
Instigating
circumstances in which these provide value.
Which makes sense, right? Because a lobbyist really isn't worth much if there aren't any votes happening.
Yeah.
If we're not voting on anything, like, what is a lobbyist doing?
Pretty takes works. Me out to dinner and pays me lots of money. Gives me wine.
Yeah, pretty much. I dig it. Art's fun too. Super good choice. Ant, what do you got for this one? What do you got for the game?
All right, so I did Sinuous Vermin.
Mm.
So one thing that I thought was really interesting as far as the monstrous or monstrosity ability is that it's really hard, I think, to communicate what's happening in the art, because on most Magic cards the art is static, right? We don't normally have these double face cards in every set. So seeing a transformation like that, where you have this little derpy creature that turns into something more menacing, is a really tough narrative to capture, I feel like. And I really appreciated how Sinuous Vermin went about this. The idea here is that it's this crazy kind of like horror creature that's akin to like an anglerfish, only instead of having a little, you know, glowing lure dangling in front of its mouth, it has a fake rat. So if you like trace that rat's tail, you can see that it's connected to this crazy tentacle monster, awesome, like chilling in the background.
It'd be nice if it didn't actually have the rat creature type, if it was like just a horror or like an ooze horror or something.
That would, right, to just play it up even more that this really isn't a rat.
It's just a decoy, but that's an appendage.
Got to get that rat tribal days.
Yeah, that's true, rat tribal.
But not necessarily here.
I think true. It's so interesting that Paliano, right, as far as the city, and maybe even if we go so far as to say the Plain of Fiora, like at its core is deceptive. Like even the creatures that are native to this world, like some sinuous rat horror living in the middle of the sewer, even that creature is deceptive on a level that is far beyond anything that we would see like on Earth, right? Like this thing grew a literal nother animal in order to trick you to eat. And like, it's totally menacing, and it really captures what I would imagine a monstrosity card to feel like I encountered it in real life.
I want to play this card 100 times. 2/2 for 2 in black all day. I'm going to play that.
Oh, yeah. It's a grizzly bear. It's a grizzly bear with upside.
Huge upside.
At common.
All right. I went for a little different direction here, and I went full flavor, full taste. I love playing Cube. It's my favorite format, by far, bar none. And looking at this set, I said, okay, well, it's Conspiracy, like the last one, neat. It's kind of like an unset, though. There's a weird unset, sort of unhinged, unglued weirdness going on. And this is the first delve into what is considered Cube-worthy things. And every time you play Cube, you always have like 5 or 6 picks that you kind of just have to take because you're like, oh, it doesn't really fit my deck. I can't really use them. Volatile Chimera, along with Ant and my preview card, changes that forever. That every pick you take in a Cube draft or even in Conspiracy could be a greater flavorful interaction. And I think that's such a brilliant, brilliant play that I can play this Chimera, and randomly I can make this 3/2 dude into maybe a crazy giant red creature. Maybe it's a dragon that didn't fit the curve, right? And it's like, oh, I got a fire dragon, sweet! Or maybe it's like a ball lightning, or maybe it's...
Yeah, but it could be anything.
Well,
it could be an Achroma. It could be a Grizzlebrand. It can be out of color. Dude, the thing that I love about these cards is that it allows that third pack bomb rare that's totally out of your color to be a pick.
Yeah.
Like if you drafted straight up red and you open Big Daddy Grizz pack 3, you can totally take it and make it work.
In a mono red. Which you do in Cube all the time. Like I understand that, you know, doing red splash something, this isn't as cool. But you do a mono red and all of a sudden you're 3/2 dude on curve. Turns into something silly and Cube, neat. But for Conspiracy itself, constrained within the set, you get a fire creature that could be anything. Like, who's casting this? How cool is that? That's never been done. I'm just
Mike,
so
I,
happy.
I actually named this card, and I went with the adjective volatile to reflect the fact that it randomly grabs you one of those three cards. You don't get to choose what creature it becomes. It's a red chaos card a little bit.
I'm all for it. I'm super happy this exists. Name fits, art fits, ability fits. This is like home run sort of jam. Like this is what I wish unsets were instead of one half. I gotta put weird tokens and have a balloon game and whatever the hell. I want things
this. That balloon game card is awesome.
Just stop. You gotta make
5/5 pink bear tokens are weird.
Listen, unless until
like,
you
hide an object.
Yeah. Like, what's in your pockets is like it's straight up that, and I'm like, that's fine, but I only want to do it once.
Why are you relegating? Why would you want to relegate such interesting design to an unset? Like an unset is by definition useless. It's like they're not gonna print another one because people won't buy it. Like it doesn't matter. You know, they're fun. It's entertaining, but like, it will always be lesser than. It always has a peripheral role in the eternal card pool. And so, if you love this kind of design, like, why not call for it in sets like this? You know, it's a great place for it. This is an eternally playable card. Are the uncards even legal? Like, can you play them in Commander? I don't think so, right?
No, it's a table rule.
It's a table rule.
So, like for example, like my play group, we allow two per deck, just because we play a very casual, you know, goofy type of a Commander.
Whatever.
So, but
it's
God,
a cube
guys.
Card.
You guys are so spiky.
Oh my
so
God.
Bad.
I'm trying.
For those Commander players out there, the spirit of Commander is alive in me. Don't listen to these two false.
Oh, it did.
Ugh.
It's okay, dude. I still really appreciate flavorful interactions. I am a narrative designer by trade. But I'm also, what that means increasingly in a professional context is the operative word there being design. Like, I'm increasingly called upon to do combat and mechanics design, like even systems designed in like some baby steps kind of way. And so if I want to be able to design for high levels of play, I have to be able to theory craft and perform at those same levels as a player. So I'm really pushing myself now to be a more competitive player, which is nothing. I've never been a competitive gamer ever. I'm just like grinding rank ladders and TCGs and just trying to get there. Cause I feel like the other side of that, I'll be better at making games.
I get that. We've rolled through our five faces. The three of us also have honorable mentions.
Oh,
who wants to go first in this? Who's got some crazy stuff that didn't fit anywhere else?
First of all,
I'm going last.
It's three of us.
Well, I mean, all right, I'm going to go coming hot with some weird dogs here. And I chose Mausoleum Turnkey. Is it because it's an ogre? No. Black card? No. Don't care. Probably. Flavor text? I don't read it. Is it because of the artwork? Nah. It's because of the name. Because right away, I'm going to shorthand this to attacking with my turkey. Straight up, I'm going for it. And I love finding those names that just immediately shorten. Lightning Bolt. I'm going to bolt you for three. Like, people just do it naturally in the game. This Mausoleum Turnkey will be Mausoleum Turkey in a second and a half. And it's okay that it's, that's part of magic, to have this language that's built upon itself, that you have to understand what the word mise means in high level Twitch magic to understand what they're talking about. And even on the micro level, they do it. And I think that's fantastic for the game, is it gives you this brand new person be like, oh yeah, I call it a turkey. And then a pro tour guy was like, oh yeah, man, that's the turkey card. I get you. And it builds this connection of community with a name that just sounds like something else. And I absolutely love that they didn't change it, because they knew this was going to happen. They totally did. Like, you could see the creative designing people being like, well, they're going to call it a turkey. Yeah, that's fine. Whatever. That's cool. And then they went with it. And I like that. I like that they're able to do that in a conspiracy set, whereas a more serious, like, Khans of Tarkir, they wouldn't allow it because it would be flavor-breaking. And I yapped a lot on that. James?
I like that they have a shovel. Shovels don't get enough representation.
What's he going to do with that shovel?
It doesn't matter.
Maybe he's going to bury the viewer?
Maybe he already did. Maybe. I mean, because if you think about it, it's a mausoleum.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Okay. The whole idea is you don't need a shovel.
Right. Yeah. You're putting,
so
putting
why does he have
on
a
the
shovel?
Ground.
That's my favorite part of this whole thing, is like, that guy looks seedy because you totally don't need a shovel.
I like that he's an ogre rogue. That's a nice combination of two types. I feel like
Ravnica had that with there was another one, like a slumlord.
Oh, ogre slumlord.
Slumlord.
Yeah, was he also a rogue? That was he was also very roguish. These are very roguish ogres.
They look good.
That's great.
Super good. James, what do you got? I know this art is fire. I already saw it. It's good.
Yeah, this art is fire. So I got Deadly Designs, which is it's an enchantment for two that says for two colorless. Well, it's a black enchantment, colorless and a black. And then 4/2 colorless, any player can put a plot counter on Deadly Designs. And when there are five more plot counters, you sack it, and its controller destroys up to two target creatures. Most importantly, this is an enchantment, once again, that any player at the table can interact with. And that's what politics is. And so cards like this is design space that I would love to see Conspiracy explore even more so. This is just a fantastic use. It's great narrative design.
I love seeing this. I love anytime it's any player may play this ability. I play Wayne Reynolds, Vintage Artist Constructed. So what, of course, do I have? I got a 3-1 flyer that anybody can discard to make it a 1-1, which is so fantastic because anyone else can discard and then they can get, I don't know, Madness go live, which would enable them, but, you know, hurt me or us, the fun sort of interactions. And I love seeing this. I want to see more of this too, James. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I also agree. Like, you know, part of this whole thing is just the simple idea that, like, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? And that's conspiracy in a nutshell. Like, if Mike is the monarch and James and I are hanging on to life, it makes sense for both of us to work together and take down the king so that one of us can be king. You know, like, there can only be one winner, and if I have to work with somebody else to make sure that that winner isn't you, then
fair enough.
I'm going to do it.
You know? All right, so Ant, what do you got for yours to wrap up the episode?
All right, so I put Parai in here. This is mostly just a nod to Sean Main, you know, who's famous for coming up with the idea to have conspiracy, and, you know, he's kind of the reason that we have this set. This version of Parai goes back to the OG flavor text.
Mm-hmm. Urza Saga, right?
The Urza Saga, right. And so, like, Sean, at his heart, right, he's a fan. Like, he won the Great Designer, or no, he came in second for the Great Designer Search 2. So, you know, a few years ago, he was just another Magic player. Like, he was just another fan of the game. And I'm just happy to see that that level of appreciation for, you know, where Magic's been and where Magic's come from is still present in the work that he's doing. And just seeing that old line of flavor text, it has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on in Conspiracy at all whatsoever. Like, it has no relevance to anything other than the simple fact that people who've been invested in this game for 10, 20 years, they can look at that flavor text, they can have nostalgia, they can remember, oh man, I can remember seeing this printed, you know, 10 years ago when Urza was totally busted. Like, the whole block was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just nice to see those nods every once in a while.
I can dig it.
I can dig it.
Right. Big props to Sean Main on this set, lead designing and killing it by far. Yeah. Wanted to say, James, thanks again for helping us out on this.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'd love to have you back on when you talk about more flavor, more taste, in the near future, hopefully.
Yeah, let's do Kaladesh.
We could do Kaladesh live. That'd be super fun.
Yeah, definitely.
So with that, James, where can people find you if they want to hear and read ish you're working on?
That's a great question. Depends on what you're looking for. If you want scathing leftist commentary, follow me, friend me on Facebook. Follow me. I'm posting that stuff there. If you want other people's jokes that I retweet with occasional links to my own narrative work, you can follow me on Twitter. I am no longer active on that platform. If you want currently out of commission fitness modeling, I'm on Instagram. But I will return as soon as I recover from this surgery.
Yep, there you go.
And then my portfolio is online at jamespianca.com. So I encourage you to get in touch with via whatever platform you find most comfortable.
We'll put it in the notes below. Ant, where can people find you?
So the easiest way to get a hold of me is usually on Twitter, or you can just go to anttestator.com and you can find links to pretty much everything that I've ever done.
All right. Well, that's great. That's great. That's great to hear. You can find us at Snacktime Cast on the Twitters. Easy search, but just put Snack Attack and Flavor and you will pop up in the Googles. You can find me at Vorthos Mike, which nobody ever knows my last name, which is comical to me. And last but absolutely not least, we always end with thanking our patrons for making this happen. Sound is getting improved. In the future, we're going to have new mics that we can send out to people for interviews. Want to thank them utterly so much. We have so many gems to send out to people. Good Lord. But otherwise, thanks so much for watching today, and we'll be back again soon.